now, 11
a.m. It's 11 a.m.
It's WMF.
I remember how I looked up.
if I'd only known it then. And they watched while you broke all the rules, and everyone thought I was your fool, but I paid the price, never even thought twice. No, no, and I loved you like I'll never love another. If I thought about all the loves I knew, I know they'd all fade except for you. And someday you'll see how much you taught me.
Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Okay.
And I apologize. My voice is a little I have COVID, so my voice is just a little rough. But thanks for being flexible, and I appreciate you taking the time to do an interview. I'll give you a quick background on our show. Something about the women. It's on the Tufts University radio station, but we've been on the air for over 50 years, and we've been playing music by women artists since 1973, and we've been playing your music the entire time. So it's a thrill for me to be able to talk to you and to get some insight into your music.
Wonderful. Great. Okay. That sounds great.
I want to welcome to the show one of my favorite songwriters of all time, Carla Bonoff. Carla, welcome.
Thank you.
Where am I talking to you today?
I am in my home in Santa Barbara, California.
Lovely, lovely. Well, I'm so appreciative of you taking the time to talk with us. You are coming to New England for a bunch of shows, actually, in our general area, and we're very excited about it. I'll see you at the Arlington Regent on August 23rd. That's here in Arlington, Massachusetts, and you're also going to be at Jimmy's Jazz and Blues Club in Portsmouth the next day, and then the day after that, the Falmouth Academy in Falmouth,
correct,
Mass. So what can people who come out to the shows expect to see and hear?
Well, I've been playing with guitar player Nina Gerber for probably over 20 years now.
Wow, yeah, she's great.
And she's, you know, for people that don't know her, she started out playing with Kate Wolf when she was 16.
Wow.
And Kate was kind of a big folk hero, and you know, in the West Coast, and especially in Northern California. So Nina kind of picked up a lot from Kate, and she plays a lot of electric guitar with me and some acoustic, and we do songs from all the way from my first album up to stuff that's more current.
Awesome. That's fantastic. And are you playing piano, or what are you doing besides obviously singing?
I play piano and acoustic guitar, which is what I've done pretty much my whole career.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about your early career, because I don't know a lot about it, but how did you get started? Did you get into this mostly as a songwriter, or as a performer, or both? What was your goal setting out?
You know, I grew up in Los Angeles in the kind of late 60s and early 70s, when all the clubs were flourishing, like the Ash Grove and the Troubadour and the Ice House in Pasadena. And so there was just a whole gang of us that would play these open mic nights. And so that's really kind of how I fell into it. And I met the late, great Kenny Edwards when I was about 16 at a transcendental meditation course that was in Squaw Valley, California for an entire month with Maharishi, which was pretty amazing.
Wow, at 16, huh?
Yeah. And so a lot of musicians were doing TM. And so there was kind of this conflux of TM and musicians and LA. And so I met Kenny Edwards, and he knew Wendy Waldman and Andrew Gold. So I played with my sister initially, and then I got into a band with those guys. So but, you know, that was an incredible time in music, really, around the Troubadour. There were so many great artists starting out, and great artists who had already gotten record deals who would come through and play at the Troubadour. And the Troubadour had this deal, this guy, Doug Weston, who owned it, where you had to play 2 weeks at a time when you came in. So when Joni Mitchell came through there the first time, she played two sets a night for 2 weeks.
Wow. And were you there?
Every night, yeah.
Wow. What was that like?
Well, I mean, I don't know how we got in there, because we didn't have any money. I think you could sneak in the back door in those days and just climb to the balcony. She was amazing. I mean, she was absolutely amazing, all by herself, playing one guitar and going in and out of all those tunings. And she was beautiful. And I mean, she was like, we were all just like, she's just can't be real. She was incredible.
Amazing. That must have been so inspiring.
Really inspiring. And also, I saw James Taylor come in with Carole King, with that band.
Right.
Carole King, Danny Cooch, Lee Sklar, and Russ Kunkel, who were all unknowns, and play that all those songs from the Sweet Baby James album. So,
oh, wow.
Sitting about, you know, 4 feet from them. And they played 2 weeks as well.
That's so great. So at that time, were you already starting to write music or performing other people's music, or where were you in your musical journey at that point?
At that point, I was trying to write songs. They weren't great. I'd already been writing music with my sister. She wrote lyrics. And then when our band started, we all started writing songs. I guess when I was about 18 or 19, because we got signed to A&M Records. And so we were writing for our band.
Wow, that's fantastic. So you really, like, from a very early age, you got to see all these greats and be inspired and start writing your own stuff. So it sounds like you wanted to perform as well as, I always think back to Carole King, who just wanted to write songs, and people were like, well, you need to perform them. And then she had, you know, this great, obviously, this performing career. Sounds like you did both at the same time and were able to be successful in that way.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think I was writing songs for other people. I never was. I was always writing them for me. And but, you know, when Linda Ronstadt's standing 3 feet from you, and you're kind of a nobody, and she's about to make one of her biggest records, you know, it's pretty hard not to say yes to that. So,
is that how it happened? She heard a song or two of yours and was interested.
Well, what happened was our band didn't really make it. And so the label dropped us. So we all split up and went our separate ways. And Kenny and Andrew joined Linda's touring band.
I see.
He was my boyfriend at the time. So he was going off on the road with Linda, and I would, you know, give him cassettes of my songs to play for her. Or when they were in town, I mean, there was a piano backstage. I remember playing Someone to Lay Down Beside Me for her backstage, some gig somewhere. And I don't think she quite got it at that moment, but I remember doing that. You know, I was just at the right place at the right time.
That's amazing. I mean, so she heard some of your songs and she recorded, stop me if I'm incorrect at all, but she did Falling Star. She did All My Life. She did Goodbye, My Friend and Trouble Again. And did she record Someone to Lay Down Beside Me?
Yes, that was one of the first ones of mine.
Okay.
She did
mm-hmm.
on Hasten Down the Wind album.
Okay, great. Yeah. So for you, what's it like to have somebody who's, you know, this great artist decide to sing your song? And what do you feel like you're sort of possessive of the song? Are you ready to let it have a life of its own?
You know, I was torn a little bit because by that time I kind of got signed to Columbia Records and I was going to make my own album. And I really didn't have like a whole bunch of songs. I mean, those were the songs that had been taking me 10 years to write. So I knew I was going to have to record them too. And, you know, of course, that created some confusion, I think, because my record came out 6 months after hers.
With right.
The three songs on it. And people were like, what, you know, who wrote these and what, you know, so there was a little bit of confusion. But on the other hand, I think that it really drew attention to my record. If she hadn't recorded my songs, I'm not sure I would have gotten as much attention.
Right, right. And the arrangements aren't hugely different. You know, it's like you can tell it's the same song. Sometimes you hear a song get covered and you're like, is that the same song?
Well, it's the same people playing on it too. It was
yeah.
Andy and Kenny Edwards, the same musician. So, you know, Kenny and I had been playing that song for years. And, you know, when Linda decided to record it, I mean, he's the one that went in the studio with her and, you know, so it was the same arrangements, really.
Uh-huh. It's fascinating to me because having been just in the audience and I, you know, I heard them both around those times, but I always sort of knew it was yours and she was singing it. So I guess that you can take some solace in that or something.
Well, you were one of those people that read credits because I think there
yeah.
was a lot of people who didn't. And I remember being on my very first big tour opening for Jackson Browne and the first couple nights I'd go out and I'd play those songs that Linda recorded, Someone to Lay Down Beside Me and If He's Ever Near. And all of a sudden I realized these people don't know I wrote these. They think I'm covering Linda Ronstadt's songs.
Oh God, that's the worst.
So, you know, once I explained that I'd written them, I think people were definitely on my side, but there was a little bit of confusion at first.
Right, right. That's when you have to come out with, there's a song I wrote. So happy
right.
Linda Ronstadt recorded it, right?
Exactly, right. I just figured they knew, but then I realized they have no idea.
Right.
So, oh, no, I'm going to have to tell them.
You have to be your own advocate sometimes, I guess.
Yeah.
How did Bonnie Raitt come to record Home?
That was actually before Linda did my songs. And, you know, I knew Bonnie kind of from a distance because we went to the same high school. But I think I don't remember exactly how we got it to her, but I know I made a demo with Kenny and Andrew. I remember making it in this little house Andrew lived in Beechwood Canyon, and somehow we got it to her and she said yes. So that was the first song of mine really that anybody recorded.
I see. Hey, let's stop and listen to that. Let's listen to Bonnie Raitt doing Home. And then we'll be back and talk more with Carla Bonoff here on Something About the Women.
Traveling at night, the headlights were bright, and we'd been up many an hour. All through my brain came the refrain of home and its warming fire. And home sings me of sweet things. My life there has its own wings. Fly over the mountain, though I'm standing still. I've seen that come in between,
the cities of tiring life. And the trains come and go, but inside you know the struggle will soon be a fight.
Back. So you're on a tour right now, and I see from your website that you're also going to be touring with J.D. Souther. What's going on there?
I thought that, you know, it'd be really fun if he and I did a tour together, not just like he plays and I plays, but that we actually stayed on stage the whole time together and played both of our songs together. And it was kind of ambitious. When I first presented it to him, he was kind of like, oh, I don't know. And I was like, come on, we could do this. It'll be fun. It'll be more fun than maybe we're having separately, slogging through sometimes, playing our own stuff for 90 minutes. Because
right.
When you're in your 70s, you know, sometimes it's just hard to sing for an hour and a half and be on the road. And I just thought, you know, I'd like to do a show that's different, that maybe would kind of invigorate me, because I would have to learn all this new music. And so that's what we've been doing. I've had to learn about 6 or 8 of his songs, which is great for my brain, learning new stuff. And he's learning mine. And I just got back from visiting him at his house in New Mexico, and we did our first rehearsals for a couple of days. So I think if we can learn everything and not forget it, I think it'll be really great, because our paths crossed when we were very young. I met him when I was 16 and he was like 21, or I was 17, he was 21, and he was in a group called Long Branch Penny Whistle with Glenn Frey.
Oh, cool.
And my sister and I opened up for them in this little club in Hollywood. So I've known him since I was a teenager, and, you know, our lives are entwined in so many ways around Linda doing our songs, and we've sang and played on each other's records. And so, I mean, there's a lot of, it's an interesting woven fabric. And I think that it'll be fun for us to be on stage together and kind of tell some of those stories. And
that sounds great. That's great. So I noticed that you've put out some albums in the last, you know, 10, 15 years. Some of them are reworks of some of your music, which I think is really interesting. And I'm curious to know, you know, why you revisited them. Some are live, some are studio recordings. And I have my kind of ideas, but I want to sort of get it from you, like what it was like to revisit those songs.
Well, the first one I did, I think it was 2008, I did a live record because I just felt like I'd grown a lot since 1978 as a singer and a musician. And we'd been touring so much that we'd gotten really good at those songs. And it just seemed like I should document what I'd been doing for the last 15 or 20 years. And so we did it here at a club in Santa Barbara and just recorded the whole thing. And so I'm really happy I did that because Kenny has passed away. And so it was really nice to have a document of that. And then the most recent one I did, Carry Me Home, which is here, was really a reflection of Nina Gerber and I playing together, you know, for a really long time, and just how the music had really kind of evolved with us, the two of us playing it. And so I just thought, you know, we could just do this quickly, just have her come on a weekend and we'll just play all the songs and just get them recorded. So that's kind of how that one happened. And then I added a new song and a Jackson Brown song and some other things that had been laying around that needed to go somewhere.
That's great. I feel like, you know, some of your earlier records, you know, they're very recognizable as like 70s or 80s type music. And so to re-envision them, and they're timeless in the new presentation, there was something about hearing them again in a fresh way that really excited me, and I thought that they were gorgeous. So actually, why don't we pause here and listen to a track or two from some of those newer albums, and then we'll be back. I'm talking with Carla Bonoff here on Something About the Women.
Somebody waiting alone in the street for someone to walk up and greet. Here you are, all alone in the city. Where's the one that you took to your side? Lonely face.
All right. And we're back. I hope my voice lasts another few minutes. I'm curious about the soundtrack work that you've done on movie soundtracks. I wasn't even really familiar that some of them were out there. So as I was looking through your discography, saw that you had a track on the Footloose soundtrack and the 8-second soundtrack. How did that stuff in the movies come about?
Well, they're all different. The Footloose came about because I think Dean Pitchford wrote all the lyrics to all those songs. And then he had different people write music like Kenny Loggins and stuff. And so they had a whole bunch of songs to go on that record. And one of the producers said, we have this song. Do you want to come in and sing it? And so I was like, okay. And so it was basically not a song of mine. It took me about 30 minutes to do. And who knew that thing would be that huge? I mean, basically, I probably supported myself for, 5 or 10 years on the income from singing that 130 minutes. So you kind of never know what's going to happen. And that thing still, it's just huge all over the world. So that one was just a fluke. And then the 8 seconds, let me see how that one happened. I think that one was, we knew the producer on that one and just asked to write a song for it. So my friend Wendy Waldman and I wrote that song standing right next to me for an actual scene in that movie. So we wrote to the film for that. I'm trying to think what else we wrote. What else did you say was there?
There was the duet with Vince Gill on 8 Seconds, and then also the Standing Right Next to Me.
Oh, right. And then the movie with Demi Moore and Rob Lowe that John David and I wrote a song for that, but that one may not be listed. Yeah, they just happened really from, you know, the directors or the producers of the movies call you up and, you know, ask you to try to write something.
That's awesome. Was it hard to write for a specific subject for the movie?
You know, actually, it's easier because it's so, you know, it's so specific. And sometimes they have like what they call a temp track in there. Like, they'll have a Phil Collins song, but they can't afford to pay for that song. So they want you to write something like that. And then you have this template, basically. And so it's kind of fun. It's kind of like a homework assignment, you know.
That's great. That's lovely. And I'm glad that you made a bunch of money from being on those soundtracks because, you know, singer-songwriters don't always get paid the way they should get paid. I know the music industry, especially now, is just not paying artists what they're worth. So happy for you there.
Thank you.
And, you know, I'm curious because I love the singer-songwriter genre, and I you know, I don't want to gush too much, but I do love your music and I love your voice. And I've been sort of listening in preparation for this interview, just listening to everything. And I can't tell if it's me being nostalgic or whether these songs are just so powerful that I'm like weepy all the time. You know, just like, oh my God, this is so moving. Where do you get that inspiration? Are they mostly personal songs, or you just go to a place where you can put yourself in somebody else's shoes?
I mean, it's a mix of both. I've written stuff that's completely about me, and I've then written things, you know, that aren't about me at all. Like that song, All My Life, that was written for a movie. It really has nothing to do with me at all. But I think it's still when you kind of tap into that place that writes in an emotional way, hopefully it's, you know, whether it's about you or not, you know, hopefully it can still be powerful. So for me, I either just come up with something and it comes out and it's great, or I'm just totally blocked. There's kind of nothing in between. I don't feel like I write bad songs. I either just write nothing or I write, you know, which is bad because really as a writer, you should be writing every day. I've been told, you know, you can't like not, it's like you can't go, I'm going to run 3 miles, but then you got to start by running a half a mile, you know?
Yeah.
Right. I have bad work habits, but that's how it goes.
Right. Well, I mean, it seems that, you know, like I said, having been listening to so many songs of yours, there's a lot there. So you must not have had that many dry times. It may not be that everything got put on a record and put out in the world, but there's a lot of, you know, there's a body of music out there that is just so powerful that I'm glad that you've made that effort, because I know as a DJ, but also just a music appreciator, when we've been playing your music on our show for 50 years, we won't stop. So I appreciate that.
Thank you so much. That's really nice.
You're very welcome. I'm looking forward. I'll be at your show in Arlington, and I'm looking forward to that. I think my co-DJ Jane will also be there. I think we're like in the fourth row or something. So hopefully you'll see our little beaming faces there.
And well, we signed CDs after, so come back. Oh. Come back, say hello to us. Yeah.
Awesome. And hopefully our listeners will also be joining us there. We've been talking about the show for a while. And those of you who are a little more distant, Carla Bonhoeff's going to be at Jimmy's Jazz and Blues Club in Portsmouth on August 24th and also at the Falmouth Academy on August 25th. That's down on the Cape. So, and again, the Arlington show is August 23rd. Anything else you want to share with us before I let you go?
You know, if they're looking for ticket links, they can go to carlabonhoeff.com and they'll see all those shows there. And it's probably an easier way to find stuff.
Okay. And that's Carla with a K, bonhoeff.com. And, let's see, actually I have one question that I forgot to ask and I'll be really upset with myself if I didn't ask it. And that is this: is there a favorite version of your song sung by somebody else? You know, one or two favorites that stand out to you that you're really glad that artist covered your song. I've always wondered that about people who write songs that get covered by other people.
I think Home by Bonnie Raitt is really probably my favorite.
Awesome. Tell me why.
Tell me why. And also tell me why by Wynonna, because I think she just did a really cool.
Oh, it's funny. I was saying, tell me why you liked that song, but tell me why is a great song also.
I don't know. I mean, it's just, you know, there's so many things that go into it because it was the first, and because I love Bonnie, and she did a really kind of cool, folky kind of take on it, which was so different from me. And, you know, it just, how can you not like it, you know?
Right, right. And then I inadvertently prompted you to talk about Tell Me Why that Wynonna did. How did that come about?
Her producer, Tony Brown, who was a big producer in Nashville, we had just worked on that song for that movie with him standing right next to me. And then he was going in to produce another album on Wynonna and just asked me if I had any songs. And I was like, well, I have an idea. I think the song that I did in 1988 might be really good for her. And the next thing I knew, they cut it. And it was great for her. It was the first time that she crossed over from country into pop with that song.
Awesome. That's a great story. I'm glad I asked without even really asking. All right. Well, thank you so much. Take care. I can't wait to see you perform in a couple weeks. And again, thank you.
I'll get back in bed.
I know. I'm going to do that right now.
All right.
All right. Take care. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And so we wrap up the interview with Carla Bonoff with a recording of Linda Ronstadt and Aaron Neville singing All My Life, which Carla wrote and was a big hit for Linda Ronstadt and Aaron Neville. Before that, we heard Carla Bonoff doing the song Falling Star, which I believe Linda Ronstadt also recorded. We heard lots of different songs, both by other artists, but all written by Carla for the most part. And if you want to check out the whole set list, you can go to spinatron.com and just navigate over to WMFO and find our show, Something About the Women. It was such a great honor for me to be able to talk with Carla. I've loved her music pretty much all my life, to quote one of her songs. And it was really fun to talk with her, even though, as I mentioned, I had COVID during the interview. So I had to really fortify myself and make it happen. All right, well, so it's about 5 minutes in front of noontime here on 91.5 WMFO in Medford. My name is Sue, here in the squeaky chair for one more hour, bringing you Something About the Women. And as promised, I'm going to feature for this second hour singer-songwriters, because that's the genre we're delving into today. And let's just take care of a little business, and then we'll be back on the other side with some singer-songwriters, including Joni Mitchell, who... Carla gave us a great description of her playing at the Troubadour and just being amazing and playing there for 2 weeks straight and going every night to hear her. So we will delve into some Joni Mitchell, some Carole King, all kinds of singer-songwriters in the next hour here. You're, of course, listening to 91.5 WMFO in Medford.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
"I'll trust water bottles and a flashlight to save the day, but I'll be proved wrong."
With a tornado approaching, I'll realize that I like a wheelchair-accessible shelter.
When the floodwaters rise, I'll be up in the attic with 20 cans of beans. It's a recipe for disaster.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
You said, "I am as constant as a northern star." And I said, "Constantly in the darkness, where's that at? If you want me, I'll be in the bar, on the back of a cartoon coaster, in the blue TV screen light. I drew a map of Canada. Canada, with your face sketched on it twice. Oh, you're in my blood like holy wine. It tastes so bitter and so sweet. Oh, I could drink a case of you, darling, and I would still on my feet. Oh, I would still be on my feet. I am a lonely painter. I live in a box of paints. I'm frightened by the devil, and I'm drawn to those ones that ain't afraid. I remember that time you told me, you said, "Love is touching souls. Surely you touched mine, 'cause part of you pours out of me."
Prepare to bleed.